Chairman, members of the Finance Committee. My name is Willie Anderson. I represent NEA Alaska. NEA Alaska has taken a position of support for this piece of legislation. We do recognize some of the problems that Representative Lawson has identified in terms of a date certain. We are also, as we read the legislation, would interpret it to mean that there will be full funding by that date, be it March 7th or 45 days after the beginning of the legislature or some time. But it's our support of the concept of early funding so the boards of education around the state would know how to deal with the number of non-tenured teachers that they have to make some consideration for regarding their contract for the succeeding year. Also, the boards of education need to make some program planning about what they're going to present for students of the state of Alaska, how they're going to educate them, what type of programs and services they will be offering them. So an early date for funding is an appropriate way of dealing with this issue, and we support the legislation before you. The last comment I would like to make is that in our review of the legislation and the history, when it comes down to May 22nd or May 8th of whenever the legislature adjourns and the budget is finalized, that is too late for boards to know what it is that they need then to scramble to make some consideration for how they deal with their employees. And we would urge you an earlier date than your adjournment date for the consideration of the education budget is an appropriate thing to consider at this time. I'll answer any questions.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too am a little concerned and wanted to have for the record a discussion about the retention notifications. And the tenured teachers notification apparently is March 16th. And for those who are being non-retained, it is a period following the last day of school. If we provided additional flexibility there, help me understand whether or not that improves the situation on tenured teachers.
One slight correction, Representative Boyer. Tenured teachers can be non-retained for reduction in student enrollment. That's the March 16th date that you're referencing. Non-tenured teacher, by and large, there's a date either negotiated in agreement with the teachers and the school district or the last day for employment for those teachers when there's a notice need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
In northern part of the state of Alaska, a lot of our school districts are out of session by May 15th or mid and early May. There's the end of the school year is upon them. In south central and southeast Alaska, the first week of June at the very latest, most times by Memorial Day, the adjournment for school is taking place. So the flexibility that is needed is dealing with those non-tenured teacher notices. If there is not funding known by the school districts before their adjournment, then the district has no choice but to non-retain these. How they're going to fund it, unless there is some guarantee of that.
There's no guarantee today.
I mean, there's not
until
that's
July
right.
1st, really. I mean, the governor has a period of time, and so it's real uncertain now. So I'm not sure. I hear that you say it's a problem, but I'm not sure it's a real problem. It may just be there's a perceived problem. It's a mechanical problem for us, obviously, and a mechanical problem for local governments trying to determine how much they have to put forward for education. So we don't want to screw the system up, I suppose, but we want to provide flexibility, too, and we don't want to cause harm to teachers in the whole process either.
There is a real problem, not just a perceived problem, in that at the present time, school districts basically offer contracts to non-tenured teachers, hiring new teachers, on the good faith that there's trying to read the tea leaves, if you will, of the legislature and say, well, they're going to fund X amount. And then they take the guess. They've signed contracts with these people. Then the district is then bound by those contracts. If there's a major drop in revenue, like there was in 1986, then the district would then scramble to see how and where they can cut. But the cutting of teachers once they have signed contracts isn't one of the options that they have. So that reduces the flexibility of the school board and school district to plan programs for the students of the community. So that's the real problem out there.
Thank you.
Thank you. Judy Stadium?
Thank you, Representative Navarro and members of the committee. I think I'd like to follow up and just... Judy Stalo. And I'm with NEA and a teacher in Kenai. I'd like to emphasize a couple of things that Willie Anderson just pointed out in response to Representative Boyer's question. I think the budget process for school districts is, as any budget process is, your best guess at any given point in time. And the more information that they have to make that guess real, the better that they do. And 3 years ago, you did fund education early. It wasn't like the governor had signed it and it was all set aside and it was all done and it couldn't be changed. But for the most part, 3 years ago, school districts knew what they were going to get. They fared better that year in terms of planning, and so therefore in terms of better expenditure of that money. I think the thing that we keep coming back for is sort of a reminding everybody that if education is a priority, and I know that it is personally with all of you, if education is important and a priority, there are really two actions that prove that. And one, it has to do with your timeline. I mean, funding it early when you can, by any possibility that you can, and the second thing is the level at which you fund it. And those two things, sort of prove out the point of what kind of a priority education is. This bill, I too realize that there might be some technical problems with it, and I'm not speaking to the part about who's controlling the expenditure of all the funds, but in essence, it's a very good bill in terms of putting before us that priority issue on timing for funding. It's never going to be written in concrete. Lots of things can happen. We might have to go back to ground zero and replan. But if there can be March or April date at which school districts have a pretty good idea of what that unit level is going to be, that is extremely helpful. And yet, I know I listened to some of you, and I've said this too, if it comes down to what's more important, the timing or the level of funding, the answer is the level of funding. Because it's nice to know early, but really, I don't like bad news, even if it comes early. So. I'd answer any questions.
Any questions there? If not, the bill will be put in a subcommittee. Representative Larson, Representative Boyer, and Representative Barnes that work with the prime sponsor to see if we can't figure out a resolution of this. And I would ask that you consider it ASAP.
UPS?
Next bill we'll take up will be House Bill 140.
Absolutely.
Which is an act relating to rate review by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission for solid waste recovery and recycling services and public utilities. Representative Finkelstein, prime sponsor. Okay. We have two people online on teleconference, Tom Turner and Mark Foster. We'll begin with Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've been working with Representative Ulmer, Representative Boyer, Representative Brown, and others the last couple of years trying to find ways to increase the level of recycling activity in Alaska. And our state, because of its distances and scale of the economy, sometimes is quite behind and will remain behind. So we've been doing the best we can in small steps to allow recycling to increase without trying to mandate huge new programs such as are going on in the Pacific Northwest. This is a very small attempt here to try to allow recycling to occur in the normal course of utility activities. The process APUC goes through is something I'm no expert on, and general utility regulation I'm no expert on. I've tried my best to understand them and come up with the simplest, most straightforward way to allow APUC to consider these costs. And you can see basically what it does. It's a relatively simple approach where the commission is going to look at any requests for rates and is going to be allowed to consider the cost that went into recycling in the program. The a classic case would be a utility operating within a city that's making decisions on how to dispose of waste. And allowed to consider those costs is the cost of recycling, the actual effort to do some waste separation, to do some separate disposal. But there's also going to be advantages to reducing the waste stream, long-term advantages on landfills and the size of landfills, and then those costs to the consumers, both short-term or long-term, and those will all be considered. And APUC will still have strong control over all of these because they will have the word reasonable in there. And basically, that one word reasonable cost is how APUC does nearly all of its regulations. They go and spend their time looking at what a utility can spend and not spend on based on that word reasonable. So I'd end my comments there, Mr. Chairman, and be glad to answer any questions.
Questions?
Looking for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
We have on Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Finkelstein, direct your attention to line 6 of section 1. And it says, in the establishment of rates of a utility furnishing solid waste material collection and disposal service, the commission shall permit recovery of reasonable. Is it your understanding that that is the charge of APUC at this time, is that they shall take into consideration such things as the recovery of different recoverable items in their permitting process?
The Representative Barnes, no, that isn't what they do at this time. The purpose of the bill is to add their ability to do that. The I was just referring to the word shall, that's shall permit reasonable cost. That kind of approach is what they deal with a lot of factors. If a utility comes in and wants to build a new plant or a new set of utility lines and they have associated costs with that, they're allowed to do that. And the commission shall consider that, but they consider it within the context of reasonable. And many, many times they've disapproved or asked for a new set of them because they believed it wasn't reasonable, reflecting the, you know, the concerns of the consumer. They were overbuilding. They were doing something that wasn't in the interest of the consumer. This would just allow recycling to be added to those.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, do you not think that the word shall is very mandatory and that may would probably be a better word in the context than that which is used here?
Well, like I said before, I don't pretend to be an expert in utility regulation matters, but we have a memo from Commissioner Foster, who's one of the existing commissioners, speaking to that. And my interpretation of it and my limited understanding on from some of the other utility regulation matters we've had before Labor and Commerce is this is their normal mode of doing business, that normally they look at a variety of factors, and they shall consider those factors, but they also consider them in the context of reasonable costs. And so I think that actually is the normal and proper way for them to be considering things. They obviously, if you use the word may, they'd all of a sudden have discretion, and they could choose not to allow any consideration, not just reasonable, but they could allow zero consideration for costs associated with recycling, and that was our concern.
Representative McClain.
Yes, thank you. Representative Finkelstein, how does it impact your bill, your House Bill 140? How will it impact the utility rates?
The it's going to allow any utility to, based on the decision of the utility, the cooperative board or the board of directors, who's ever in charge of it, to, if they choose, and only if they choose, to add to their costs and their delivery of services, recycling as part of that. They might choose, for instance, to invest in a giant magnet that's going to pull out some of the iron scrap out of the waste flow and sell that. The cost for the salvage would be allowed to be included, and the cost of actually buying the magnet would be included. The cost could arise based on that. They could drop based on that. It would just be a factor that could be considered.
Okay. Again, there were several legislations that were passed last year with regards to waste recycle recovery and grants. What relationship does this bill have with those bills that were passed last year?
Those generally, I think it was a member of this committee's bill that was involved in that. My memory is it's a grants to municipalities, mm-hmm. and it enables municipalities to deal with solid waste. We originally, had in mind that we could go and use those grants to promote recycling, and eventually, in the long run, we'll be able to do that. The problem now is that so much of our state is so far behind in dealing with solid waste. Basically, they don't even have good dumps, and they haven't had the money and the technical assistance to build good, safe dumps, that we're going to probably, for many years, be spending most of our assistance money in helping people develop those kind of basic garbage services. Mm-hmm. And most of those areas aren't going to be choosing to pursue recycling as part of their costs. There are very few, in the more remote areas of the state, there are very few utilities who actually are even regulated by APUC for garbage regulation. But for those that do, they may choose, and it may be cost-efficient in some of those areas. I'm not familiar enough with the situation, but it would be their own choice.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, we'll go to Anchorage and Mark Foster from the APUC.
Good afternoon, Representatives. I'm merely here to answer any questions you may have with respect to comments I've made previously, and I'm at your disposal.
Are there questions for Mr. Foster? Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hi, Mark. In the 26 years that I've worked around Alaska Public Utility Commission of Regulations and submitting rate cases, I would ask for your comments on Representative Barnes' earlier suggestion on the difference between may and shall here. If you would care to comment on the differences that you would envision that wording in the bill on line 6, and also I just might say that in the past, I'd never seen a commission be shy about utilizing the word may as broadly as they wanted to on rate cases, but do you have any comments on the difference there?
I believe the difference allows the commission in the shall permit section that basically forces the commission to review the reasonable net operating capital costs and any associated revenues. So as part of the rate case filing, we would be required to look at those numbers and see if they were in fact reasonable. The may permit language, I believe, gives the commission the discretion not to look at those costs as part of a rate case filing.
So what's he prefer?
Yeah. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, in the case of possible private collection utility somewhere where there wasn't adequate transportation to realistically economically transport the salvage to a market, you would feel that the commission in that instance, with even if the word shall was in there, they still would have the prerogative of not allowing a highly uneconomic action to occur, especially if the rates would have to be raised considerably to accommodate it. Is that your feeling?
Representative Sharp, yes. I would envision this working in such a way that if recycling was the same as or cheaper than alternative disposal methods, such as dumps where tipping fees are upwards of $100 a ton, in those cases, those recycling costs would certainly be allowed as reasonable. give us an alternative to landfilling or incineration that in many cases is cheaper.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Not Tom Turner from Anchorage Recycling is also available in Anchorage. Mr. Turner?
Yes, thank you for letting me speak to this bill today. In the position of Anchorage Recycling Center, we get a fair amount of phone calls of people calling us requesting information on how recycling goes. One of the things that's happened over the last year is we've had literally overwhelming response of people calling Anchorage Recycling Center wanting some type of curbside pickup program. A curbside pickup program would exist where people can leave their recyclables sorted at the curb and the waste hauler would pick it up. This support has come from virtually throughout the entire state. We've had Good Sense in Fairbanks working on trying to get recycling going up there, and they're actively trying to get curbside going. We've had Dillingham, Mark Litzka has called us trying to see what could be done there. There's been a fair amount of support coming from Matsu, and of course, Juno has really been looking at trying to do some type of curbside. The Kenai landfill is going to be very expensive, and there's a lot of people actively pursuing curbside in Kenai, including Peggy Mullins' organization. And of course, out in Eagle River, we've even had Sandy Meehan give us a call because people want curbside recycling. The problem with curbside is it's very expensive, and the value of the recyclables may or may not pay for the system. The other problem with it is the recycler, like ourselves, are actually processing centers that ship stuff out. We're not the people that actually go out and get the recyclables. That's the job of the hauler. And so one of the things that haulers have is their major expense is the landfill. And what this bill would do would allow a hauler, whoever the APUC regulates, to go ahead and put in the service that people are requesting, and then go ahead and charge for that collection service. The recyclables then could be A, sold if they have a high enough value, B, maybe they'll have to pay a recycler to take them off their hands, or C, maybe some other type of alternative set up. But currently, there's no mechanism in place for curbside being put in place. Down in the lower 48, they approach it anyway. They either pay for it directly on the state grant fund. Currently, there are seven states that put no money into recycling, and Alaska's one of them, up until the RAP Act last year. They go ahead and they use user fees, or they go ahead and they have some type of increased overall cost that everyone pays for. But this system would be allowed is not forcing government to subsidize recycling, but actually just letting the user fee and the people that actually want to pay for the system. Again, referencing to what Commissioner Foster said, that this would be like a least cost analysis versus a landfill. They have a choice of spending $100 a ton to put in the landfill, or a choice of $60 a ton to ship it out. In the short term, it might be expensive for the residential accounts, but in the long term, as the cost of these landfills increase, this would be a much cheaper alternative than developing the cost of new landfills and passing on to consumer. And this is really a great step in the extension of what the RAP Act did last year, which was getting people to address waste management problems. Now what we can do is actually start putting implementation and putting programs in place that encourage and recycle, and it's basically responding to what the public really wants. And the APUC, of course, is the best organization to protect the public interest so that they are protected from undue profit centers developing here. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I'm sure I can answer any questions that any representatives may have.
Okay, is there any further questions? Okay, there are no further questions. This bill has zero fiscal notes. If we want to further debate it, Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman, if you're ready for a motion, I'd move that we report out the committee substitute for House Bill 140, Labor and Commerce, with its zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
There are objections? Without objections, so moved. Next bill we have on the calendar is House Bill 65, an act relating to membership on and composition of members of the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game relating to disclosures under the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act by members of the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game and repealing certain references to the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game. Prime sponsor, Representative Cliff Davidson. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope that my friend
and sign does not prevail here. But. Mr. Chairman, House Bill 65 does four primary things. It increases compensation for fish and game board members. It makes clear that board members are under the conflict of interest statutes. It adds to the governor's authority to remove members for cause, for specific causes. And fourth, it clarifies and confirms that members of the boards of fish and game may be removed only for those causes. Going back to increased compensation, members currently receive $150 per day per diem. There is some conflicting language here, but all it means is simply that for each day they have a meeting, they currently receive $150 per day, which includes their per diem rate. And frankly, we're finding it more and more difficult to get qualified people to serve on the boards of fish and game because people simply cannot afford to devote the time that's required. I recall a statement by one board member in the meeting before last year in Juneau where that person who had served on one of the boards for 18 years felt that, well, he said he'd been talking to his wife and they had estimated that just to be able to serve it cost him over that period of time probably upwards of $65,000 or more. And that was just for his expenses to be there. And another point I think that is important is to realize that the Board of Fish and the Board of Game make allocation decisions that affect the lives of many people, not only their economic lives, but their cultural lives. And as well, we're not on a teleconference, are we, Mr. Chairman? Yeah. Especially in our fisheries, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry. So the economic stakes are high indeed. As I indicated earlier, it does in fact bring board members under the conflict of interest statute, and it clarifies the authority for the government to remove members for a cause, and expands that authority by making it very clear that the governor can remove a member who has been convicted of a misdemeanor for violating a statute or regulation. And finally, again, the issue of dealing with removal for cause. For 30 years, everyone believed that the governor did not have the authority to remove board members. And we see presently differing legal opinions that make it evident that the law needs to be clarified, and this is exactly what House Bill 65 does in part. Under Article 3, Section 26, the legislature clearly has the power or the authority to define the removal powers of the governor. And it is, I think, important that we insulate the boards of fish and game from undue political pressure. Especially the boards of fish and game need to be a cut, if you will, above political whim, Mr. Chairman. So the goal here is to insulate the boards of fish and game from politics and not divorce them from it, and to pay members at least a sum that allows them to be able to afford to attend meetings. And with that, I would conclude my remarks and would be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Phillips. Maybe I could be wrong on this. Page 2, line 28. I'm looking through the supplementals here. Do you really want people to repeal the section that they have to be an American citizen?
That's in the Constitution, Representative Phillips. That's covered in the Constitution, so I don't. That's not really a problem here. It's my understanding it would be unconstitutional for us to demand that Well, your question is whether we want a citizen.
Well, the repealer there repeals the requirement of the United States citizen to be on the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game.
Representative Phillips, if you look at Article 3, Section 26 of the state constitution, that is the applicable language here. And what we say here is that they shall be citizens of the United States. So it's already in the Constitution.
So why do we state it in the first place?
Why
is it in the statute in the first place, then?
Representative Phillips, there's lots of things in the statute that probably don't have a good explanation.
You're recycling introduction.
Mr. Chairman, I just ask a question of the sponsor here, whether or not he would be averse to a simple amendment, a very small, non-controversial amendment, which would add after the, I'm not proposing it, but would add after members of Board of Fisheries and Board of Games and members of the Alaska State Legislature.
That's $150.
I kind of like that level 22.
Oh, well, I would have no objection, Representative Boyer, but I would like to see this bill passed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one suggested amendment, if I might. On page 2, line 21, I would suggest that we take out, after interest, whether significant or not. The effect here is, and this was added in judiciary, and that's a good place to have this kind of legal scrutiny. However, the effect of this amendment is, if you own the Board of Fish and you own some stock that is a subsidiary of a corporation that belongs to another parent group, that could very well indicate that you would have to go through a tremendous amount of verification to show whether it's significant or not, that interest in me. And so I really don't think that is necessary, would recommend that you delete that.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Representative Navarro. I'd have to agree with that, with what the Chris just proposed as a stockholder in CFAB, which I think a lot of fishermen are. That would pretty much preclude them, or they would be subject to this, because when you borrow money from CFAB, you become a stockholder, so that would create some real problems. I think that would eliminate a lot of people from being eligible. So I would really like to get rid of this.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Are there further questions or comments at this point? My intention is to put the bill into a subcommittee. Representative Jack will chair. Representative Sharp. Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Chairman, I would note that Mr. George Utramal here is here, the drafter of the bill, and if he had any further legal clarifications, I'm sure he would be happy to accommodate your questions.
Okay, I would like to ask a question just very quickly.
Thank you very much.
George, on that, what he suggested taking out on line 21 of page 2, is that necessary to be in the...
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is George Utramal, Legislative Counsel. The words that the representative proposed striking were on page 2, line 21, whether significant or not. The effect of removing those words would be to require that a member of the Board of Fish and Game report personal and financial interests. That is already covered by existing law, and would make removal of this provision would make this whole section superfluous. The addition of significant or not increases the burden on the boards and members of boards of the Fish and Game to report all their interests that they may have, whether personal or financial, in businesses that relate to fish or game. It puts a significant burden on them to research their assets and their holdings and their interests and disclose those publicly. The significant change over existing law is the fact they have to report the interest, whether or not it's significant. And did I answer your question?
The current law requires them to report it, whether it's significant or not?
Just requires them to report significant interests.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Barnes?
Is that not essentially the same law that we fall under for APOC, that we have to submit our sources of income?
They have an additional requirement under 3950, which is the Conflict of Interest Act, which I think you're subject to. They also are subject to the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act, which this provision relates to. And they also have reporting requirements under that, and they are not allowed to, under that, to allow their personal or financial interests affect their actions that they take. And this provision relates specifically to their code of ethics under 3952.
We've assigned our best legal expert on the committee to the subcommittee, so we'll ask them for further consideration. Is there any other comments or questions? Representative Boyer.
Just a general comment that the governor's office apparently feels that these folks who serve for 68 days, unlike the 75 days that he hopes we serve, are somehow unable to sustain themselves away from home at the current compensation rate. And that I find a little inconsistent with his position or the governor's office position on other legislation dealing with legislative executive and legislative compensation. So it's interesting, just interesting to read.
Representative Vaughn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had two amendments. One is simply a policy call, but the other one, I think, relates to a section of the bill that I would like to direct your attention to. On page 1, line 11, in the present statutes, it says the governor shall appoint each member on the basis of interest in public affairs, good judgment, knowledge, ability, and the field of action of the department from which appointed, with a view to providing diversity of interest and points of view in the membership. That was dropped in this bill. I'd like to know if there was a reason why that particular language was dropped out of the bill as it relates to existing statutes.
Mr. Chair, which was applicable to the boards of fisheries and game, as well as several other boards listed in AS 3905060, is no longer applicable to the boards of fish and game if the references in that statute to the boards of fish and game are deleted or repealed under Section 6 of the Act of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, understanding that it would be repealed under this bill, do you, it then becomes a policy for this committee whether or not we think that there should be some basis for these appointments as it relates to good judgment, their involvement in public affairs, knowledge of ability in the field. So that is one of the amendments that I proposed, and I'd like some consideration given to that.
Okay. That particular one. Okay, that's all we have before the committee. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we leave, I just wanted to discuss for a moment how we will proceed or not proceed in light of the governor's letter informing us that he will not be submitting his budget amendments as we were previously expecting to receive those today. Mr. Chairman, I feel that we have made absolutely every effort to move the budget process along in an orderly way, and recognizing that you never have perfect information and that there's always more information that could be obtained, that we're recognizing the necessity of breaking the logjam at the end of the session by somebody's got to step up and make a decision. The concern I have is that if we are going to receive these amendments on March 21, that will be, in fact, right at the end. We will literally be in the middle of closeout. And I beg your pardon? I yield the floor to Representative Phillips.
Yeah, I don't believe it's going to be the 21st. I do believe the amendments will be coming down probably Monday or Tuesday of next week, the information we got earlier this week. Fines and charges.
Apparently.
That's what was relayed to us the other day. So I agree with you. I think we ought to be having some sense of direction. It's frustrating.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just basing it on his sentence.
Yeah,
accordingly, the additional time permitted under state law for amendments will be needed. And my other comment, Mr. Chairman, in addition to what are we going to do about our process, is if there are indications that revenues are dramatically less than earlier projected, I certainly would appreciate some information from the administration on this. He says recent events are overshadowing his initial intentions, and that early indications are there's this dramatic change. I think it would behoove the administration to come and share this information with us so that we can proceed with our situation as fully informed as it's possible to be. And I guess throughout the subcommittee process over the last couple of weeks, I've had a number of division representatives and department representatives discussed amendments they have submitted, amendments they believe will be approved, amendments they hope will be approved, and so on. It's just a very fluid and frustrating situation, but I guess all said, I think we should proceed with our process and just maybe write the governor a letter back and say, we're doing our best to accommodate what you asked us to do in your opening remarks to us when we got here, which was to adjourn in 75 days, and we're now less than 30 days away from that target. And I didn't think then it was possible to do it, but I think at the pace we're proceeding now, hopefully we could finish our work before the 120-day deadline without having a jam up at the end, which is what we always seem to fall into. But I'm just very disappointed with this because I think it, at a minimum, will disrupt our closeout and also delay us several weeks unless we just proceed and ignore any amendments that the administration might wish to make.
Okay, it's the chair's intention to...
I'll be brief.
Well, I'll recognize just as soon as I get done announcing my intentions. Chair's intention is to roll along with the schedule that we have now. If amendments are provided to the subcommittees in time for them to complete them within their closeouts, great. If not, the Finance Committee will consider them as part of the budget closeouts when we close out the budget. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I very much appreciate your remarks. I think they're right on target. I think that when the administration gave their state of the budget address, or whichever address it was, state of the state, that said they want us to have the budget done and out of here in 75 days, that they were the new kids on the block at the time, and they were being very idealistic, and we all like to be idealistic as best we can. But in this process, certainly we have to look at what the revenue projections are, and I just hate to remind them of that FAFU that they made in their opening remarks to the legislature.
Okay, I recall it was asking us to pass the budget in the legislature to pass the budget in 60 days.
So
introduce the bill to have us out of here in 75 days. Representative Boyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm less concerned with having the House pass an early budget for whatever. hasty choices, and so I would just hope that there may be, that there would be some flexibility in the event that some departments don't in fact have the governor's amendments available to them, that in our closeout process, which this would put us in the middle of, that it could accommodate the additional amendments before we actually present the final budget to the floor for consideration.
Representative Phillips.
Well, Mike, I would just recommend that this committee pursue our own course of action as we had planned originally. Just sort of roll with the punches when they do come in with the amendments. This is very frustrating. It's my understanding that they only have it either Friday or Monday of next week, these amendments. Despite what this letter says, I think what they're doing is saying, well, give us outermost limits just in case. But I think the committee as a whole, just to get the business done in an orderly fashion, do the people's business, we should just follow your timeline. Let's get on with the people's business. And if the amendments come in, fine, we'll deal with it. If they don't come in, then they don't come in.
Representative Brown.
I wonder if anyone has been given, other than what Mr. Stastny shared with us the other day when he was here, about his expectations for what the revenue forecast would be. Because at that time, and just doing a ballpark feel for it, it didn't seem like there was that much of a shift from the low case that we'd been considering earlier and from what our plan is based on. So I guess what I'm wondering is there something new that has come about that means we're more than, you know, 100 or a couple hundred million short for 92, for all 91 and 92 considered as a whole? Is there some change here? Should we ask revenue to come over and testify on the status of the forecast at this time? They've apparently communicated something to the governor. Perhaps we should get them over here and ask them what their opinion is at this time.
Commissioner Fisher is scheduled for confirmation hearings on Monday of next week
in
our committee. So we'll have an opportunity then to ask him whether or not there is any new information available. Other than that, all that's going on is a lot of speculation, and that's not new. Anything further?
So
maybe.